Welcome to Lessons in Leadership, Steve Adubato with my colleague, Mary Gamba. Mary, how are we doing today?
We're doing really great today, Steve. How are you?
Doing great. We're going to talk to our longtime friend, Wes Matthews, President and CEO of Choose New Jersey. Choose will come up. You see it over Wes's right shoulder. Hey, remind everyone what Choose is, Wes.
Yeah, thank you, Steve and Mary, for having me on again. So Choose New Jersey is basically the state's global business ambassador. We tell New Jersey's story to the world, and we help companies land here in New Jersey successfully.
And in that spirit, this is part of our This Is New Jersey initiative. Recently came back from a trip, India?
That's right. That's right.
Why the heck India, the Middle East, Latin America? What's going on? Who's going? And how is that This Is New Jersey?
Yeah. So thanks for that question. I think, you know, the premise of the question is probably why global partnerships matter. And for us at Choose New Jersey, you know, we've been pretty clear-eyed about who we are as a state. You know, we're an economic powerhouse. We have this heritage of invention, innovation, discovery. We are not the lowest cost state, so we're also clear-eyed about what we are not. And so understanding who we are and then understanding who our trade and investment partners are around the globe was really important for us and for Choose New Jersey under the Murphy administration, this iteration of Choose. So we took a real clear-eyed approach to who our top trade and investment partners are, focused on those relationships for several years. And then we took a few calculated bets. So you mentioned India. India, you know, to me, it's not a calculated bet at all. We are clear-eyed about India. You look at the amount of companies and business development opportunities for us as an organization and our state. You take India, you combine almost the rest of the world in terms of our business development pipeline, and that doesn't even equal what's coming out of India for us. So we've bet big on India. We've taken some bets in other parts of the world, the Middle East in particular, Israel. Again, not a stranger to New Jersey in any way, but some of the Gulf Arab states where we've not played as a state over the last several decades. We decided to engage that part of the world more. We're going to be doing a bit in Latin America, particularly Mexico, in the coming months, and hopefully set up a beachhead there.
A lot going on. Mary, jump in.
Speaking about tying together the entire world and New Jersey, I would love to pivot to FIFA. If I'm not mistaken, you are on the board of FIFA, and there's some games going to be happening here. I know some really great things happened over the past couple of months, just some, you know, to wet everybody's whistle. Talk about the economic impact of FIFA coming to New Jersey and the region in 2026.
Yeah.
World Cup is huge.
Huge.
You bet. You bet. It's huge for us as a country, huge for us as a state, but it's huge, all caps, for the world. Soccer.
Why, Wes?
What's that?
Why?
Well, soccer is the most watched sport in the world, and that's often lost on American audiences. You know, I'm a football, baseball, basketball fan. I've come to love soccer over the last 15 years or so. That correlates directly to my affiliation with the governor. But why FIFA and this tournament and soccer matters to New Jersey? It's pretty clear. I mean, we are, as a state, a premier sports destination. We have, you know, six teams of various sports headquartered in New Jersey. Only one of them has the name New Jersey in their title, but we'll take what we can get for now. For us,
the best one, right, Wes?
Has that's
New Jersey
right.
In the title?
That's right. Let's go, Devils.
I know you're
not going to resist.
You are not going to let that go.
So beyond kind of world-class venues, you know, MetLife Stadium, Prudential Center, our location being right at the heart of the Eastern Seaboard, of course, a passionate fan base. For us at Choose and our friends at the Economic Development Authority and the front office, economic development through the FIFA lens is a huge deal. I'll take tourism and hospitality. So you know this, but FIFA is going to drive hotel stays, restaurant activities, visitor spending across the state. And that's because New Jersey, we're hosting many games, eight games, including the final on July 19th, right in the middle of next summer season. But we also have Boston to our north and Philadelphia to our south as host cities. So you put New Jersey right in the middle of that, you can have fans follow their teams through the Northeast Corridor and hopefully spend a lot of their dollars right here in New Jersey on the shore and in our towns and cities across the state. So it's really exciting. I would say Also, obviously, job creation, the global visibility. So we're already a global state. We have trademarked New Jersey as the world's state recently, but any additional global visibility in a positive frame through sports will take it. But also the infrastructure investment. So there's millions of dollars going into improvements in transportation, in
That's right.
stadium facilities, and public amenities. It's going to be a game changer for us.
Wes, one quick follow-up on this. You mentioned the governor, you mentioned the front office. We're taping this right before a gubernatorial election. There'll be a new governor in January, but the mission of Choose doesn't change. The need to create economic activity doesn't change. The connection to the global economy doesn't change. How the heck do you communicate to whomever becomes governor the importance of what you're doing, or do they already know that?
Yeah, I think, both candidates and their camps know about Choose. We have taken a proactive approach through our board, and myself. We've
Headed by
engaged.
Ralph LaRosa at PSE&G, our longtime friend. Go ahead.
We love our chairman. So
Yep,
that's
they're
right.
also a major funder of what we do in public broadcasting. Go ahead.
That's right. And a major funder to what we do at Choose New Jersey. But through Ralph and our board members, we have engaged both gubernatorial candidates to, explain what Choose has done, kind of our economic impact, how we're nonpartisan. We
That's
are a
right.
complement to what the state does through the Economic Development Authority, through the Business Action Center, through tourism. We are there to supplement and complement the efforts of the state. So I both candidates are very well aware of the impact and importance of Choose.
In that spirit, folks, go on the Choose website, find out not only what they're doing, why they're doing it, the impact it's having. It affects and impacts all of us. Wes, thank you. Wish you and the team at Choose all the best.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks, Mary.
You guys stay with us. We'll be right back.
This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Vecino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Prager Metis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, the New Jersey Sharing Network, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, showing the world what great minds can do since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
We are honored to once again be joined by George Helmy, Executive Vice President, Chief External Affairs and Policy Officer at RWJ Barnabas Health, former United States Senator, former Chief of Staff to Governor Murphy, who's had a long career in government, now in healthcare. Put this part of our series, Leaders in Healthcare. George, good to see you.
Great to be with you, Steve. Thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
It absolutely is. And let's do some healthcare stuff. And then I lean into civility and public dialogue a little bit with you because you understand it better than most. First, in terms of healthcare right now, we had a healthcare leader on recently when I asked, what's the number one challenge facing most healthcare leaders? The Medicaid cuts came up in the so-called, I don't know what's being called this week, but the big, beautiful bill. How concerning is that to you, those cuts?
Yeah, it's really concerning. I think it's at the forefront of every healthcare provider, whether you're the state's largest academic system, like RWJ Barnabas Health, or you're a single hospital system. You know, your viewer knows this better than others, Steve, because of who you are and the audience of this show. The cost of healthcare far outpaces the reimbursement rate of healthcare. So any additional strain to the finances means less investment. And that means lack of ability to invest in community health programs that keep communities healthier, keep people out of our ERs, less investment in the latest technologies, ability to compensate the workforce appropriately. So, we're really worried, and I don't want to belabor the answer here, but I think it's important that we were able to get real help from our congressional delegation to put off some of the worst parts of this bill. But it gets pretty bleak in the coming years, and we're going to work very hard to make sure that it doesn't actually hurt the provision of services in New Jersey.
Along those lines, it's so interesting in the role you play at RWJ Barnabas Health. And let me disclose, RWJ Barnabas Health has been a longtime underwriter of public broadcasting and also our Caucus Educational Corporation affiliated with public broadcasting. And as we do this program, let's just say there's a lot of important information in the news about the challenges facing public media. That's not what we're here to discuss, but I am curious about this. From your perspective, I mean, we're engaged in a series looking at, in part underwritten by RWJ Barnabas Health, trust in the public health care system. Just basic trust and what happens when you don't have trust. You understand this, not just as a health care leader, but as a former United States Senator and Chief of Staff to the Governor. Am I making too much, George, of trust in the public health system? And if you don't, that's a big problem. Please.
Yeah, I think I would even broaden that. I think it's well said, Steve. I think it's trust in public institutions, right? Whether it be your local government all the way up to the United States Senate, trust in the office of the President of the United States, and trust in institutions like your healthcare provider. There's nothing more intimate than the relationship between a provider and a physician and a patient. And when you get swept into a media narrative, whether you're the Congress or you're a institution that provides community health care, it's always challenging. And we in the system, this is why we make investments of whether it be, PBS or whether it be other public institutions. We are invested in the community's well-being, whether it be access to local media or whether it be access to the flu shot. It's a part of who we are. We're woven into the fabric of our communities. But as someone who loved my government service and loves my government, and loves my country, I worry every day about what the gap in this trust of institutions will mean for my kids and my kids' kids.
You and I have talked about this privately as well when we talk about our kids. What do you tell your kids as to, because sometimes our kids, our children, and they're different ages, teens and early 20s, et cetera. What our kids often in different ways frame this question. And I know, George, we're talking about health care, but again, I'm taking advantage of your background and also as a dad. Dad, they're all, it, what's going on doesn't really seem to be dealing with what's going on in government doesn't seem to be connected to what's really going on in people's lives. It looks like all theater. My son said it looks like all theater and blaming is and oversimplification.
I do think that's an oversimplification, and I have two teenage boys, and we're fortunate to have these conversations around the dinner table, and I harp back to three truths. One is belief in government, and that government can do and should do good things, and a respect for the office, meaning, you can disagree with whoever's in the office of the presidency, but he is still your president. He or she is still your president, and there's a respect for that that must come whether you agree or disagree with that person's actions. It's a respect for the office that that person holds and what it means, and the awesome authority there. Two is that important things are hard, and I cherish my government service, whether it be as a staffer, in state government or federal service. And those were really hard years. You're disagreeing with people, you're pushing an agenda, but important things are hard, and service is really important. So find an opportunity to serve, whether it be your local community, or in the most powerful halls. And three is government connects to everything you do, whether it's picking up your trash or your tax rate. And so if you stay on the sidelines, well, then you just get the impact. You get to watch the show, and what happens, happens, and you got no role in it. Play a role, be engaged.
To George's point, check out, you'll see our website, steveadubato.org. I did an interview with Professor Eddie Gloud from Princeton, wrote a wonderful book called We Are the Leaders We've Been Looking For. That is very consistent with what George just said. Let me move it back to healthcare. Artificial intelligence and healthcare. Go, George.
It's the wave of the future. It's making things, better. Both the technology helps us do our job better. the technology of watching how we can improve the delivery of care, how we can improve back-end operations to improve the client and the customer and the patient experience, making lives easier from a process and a technology perspective for our providers and therefore our patients. We're already seeing just the beginning of this, Steve, and I think what this will do in terms of bettering services is going to be phenomenal. I don't know that in healthcare, at least, there's going to be a lot of. I know that people are worried about job displacement or replacement. What we're seeing now is improvement of process, and that process helps our provider. It helps our supervisors. It helps everything on the, the operations side, and all of that plays a role in improving the customer experience. We're very proud of our role in advancing that technology.
Another conversation you and I had a while back, and we have the county executive in Essex County, Joe DiVincenzo, who's a longtime friend, and he's been on with us many times. Joe often talks about, and Joe is, as a government official, he gets stuff done. Let's just say that, okay, about Joe. And he has his own unique leadership style, which he'll talk about on our series, Lessons in Leadership, but collaboration, partnerships. I know there are very tangible relationships, collaborations, partnerships between RWJBarnabas Barnabas Health and just the County of Essex. By the way, every county in the state. But I'm thinking about Essex because I live in Essex and I see it all the time. Why is it so important for RWJBarnabas Health and a county government to work together for people?
Well, I want to pull two strings here, so forgive the long answer, but it's such a great question. It's frankly, it goes back to what you just said about trust. So Joe D is a trusted leader, right? That's a trusted institution. Joe D as an institution and the County of Essex as an institution. So you have RWJBarnabas Health, which is a trusted institution, and the County of Essex partnering. You're just delivering a trusted resource to the community. And it's the simple things. Put aside technology we barely understand to the side for a second. Just last week, we stood with Joe D to announce a pediatric mobile van. We're going to be able, so this van rolls up, it's pink, it's got animals on it. It rolls up to a local community, and we can do primary care for a child there. And as you know, Steve, the data, we've actually discussed this on this show. If we're able to do eye exams and ear exams and make sure that kid can see and hear in those early ages, they're going to do better in school, they're going to get a better job, they're going to deliver better economic output and long-term career. And we're partnering with the county to deliver that right on your block instead of waiting until you present to one of our acute care hospitals. And that's what partnership means. It's two trusted organizations able to do great work at the most basic levels. And let me flip that for back to your AI question is RWJBarnabas Health is partnering with world-class institutions in the Helix in Newark, in New Brunswick, New
Well,
Jersey.
Chris Paladino and
Chris
the
Paladino.
Jeff Cook. Good, I'm
You
sorry.
got many of your healthcare providers, you got Princeton and Rutgers all coming together, working on AI, solving the problems of today with the technology of the future. And we've partnered in Jersey City with SciTech City, which is being honored at the World Economic Forum in a few weeks about its advancements in AI. So, we could do the basics of delivering community health because of those partnerships and that trust factor, but we can also be, as we always have been, that innovation energy, partnering with technology and healthcare to deliver better results for our clients.
And your CEO, Mark Managhan, that's the way he's big into relationships and partnerships as well, right, George?
It's the foundation of his ethos. The relationships and the partnerships within the system, then build them outside the system and deliver the best healthcare that we can for New Jerseyans.
Let me just say this. And again, when you're in media, you're in healthcare, whatever it is, even though healthcare, the stakes are sometimes awfully, even though what we do we think is important, healthcare is important in life and death situations. I'll say this, and I won't get on my soapbox because my team will say, you're not there to be on your soapbox. But I'll say this. I'm not a fan of people who say we're going to do it alone because I don't know how you do that. I just don't know whether it's building a media information network, building not just a large healthcare system, but collaborating with government, collaborating with private entities, collaborating with DevCo and Chris Paladino. No one does it alone. Anyway, I'm off my soapbox. Hey, George, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it. We'll continue the conversation.
Steve, thank you, and thank you for what you and your team do. We appreciate it.
We keep trying. Hey, listen, that's George Helmy, RWJBarnabas Health. We're right back right after this. Stay with us.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
Operating engineers are the men and women who move mountains and build New Jersey. Responsible for our region's tallest building, constructing our modern energy grid, cleaning up our environment, replenishing our beaches, cleaning up at ground zero, building our next great transportation corridor, and training the next generation of skilled builders. Headquartered in Springfield, IUOE Local 825 represents more than 8,200 heavy equipment operators, mechanics and surveyors in the construction industry, as well as stationary engineers who work in operations and maintenance buildings and industrial complexes across New Jersey and in the lower Hudson Valley of New York. With our training and skill, we do the job right, on time and on budget. We keep the lights on and the trains running. We build the bridges and pave the roads. We protect the shore. We rebuild our cities. We clean up the past and we build our tomorrow. Operating Engineers Local 825. Better building begins here.
Welcome back to Lessons in Leadership. Steve Adubato with my colleague Mary Gamba. Hey Mary, it's about 4:15 in the afternoon. We've been taping since 8:45 or so?
Yeah, I sat down at 8:15 a.m. this morning and you joined us after that and literally been live taping since 8:45.
What is the connection between leadership and endurance?
Cappuccinos. Lots and lots of caffeine and coffee.
But in all seriousness, it does take physical, mental, whatever, energy.
It takes mental energy, especially when you have other things going on at the same time. It's been, I said sometimes you feel like when the universe is just kind of rocking and you're not quite sure what direction it's going in. And when you have that going on, but you need to be present, be focused in the moment. I told you every single day when I wake up, I say, I'm going to be passionate. I'm going to be present. I'm going to be focused. Yeah. And I'm going to be grateful. And it shouldn't take something horrible to happen in our lives to get us to press pause and reflect. But sometimes you need to remind yourself that you need to be present and in the moment and be grateful, because at the end of the day, you know, your family, you know, your coworkers and all of that is and your dogs are most important.
Maybe you're never mind.
I love my Harley, my little old girl.
I'm learning to tolerate our dogs. April, why are you laughing? I'm tolerating our dogs more. I'm not going to lie and say I'm in love with them the way everyone else in the family is. Hey, let's try this, Mary. Before we get out of here, this edition of Lessons in Leadership, I want to thank all of our guests, all of our sponsors. Everyone has been great in challenging times. We're starting an initiative, one of the modules, if you will, one of the areas we're working on in our Leadership Academy is particularly with Valley, our longtime financial partner. We're doing a Leadership Academy there. We're working with Sabine Salvatore and the team there. And it's an initiative called It Starts With Me. And what it really is a module, a track of programming around or content around leading change yourself, meaning be the change, mm-hmm. right? As opposed to, I got this quote, You ever hear people say this? Why can't they... keyword they. Why can't they make things better? And I often think, who's they? And people often mean the leadership, the top, the people get paid the most. And then I'm thinking, what about if we said to people, what about if you're they? Mm-hmm. Is that wacky talk?
It's not wacky talk. And it's funny, some of these concepts, it's once you start to say them and they become part of your DNA, your leadership DNA, it's such common sense, right? All our lives, like, oh, why don't they do a better job cleaning the street? Or why don't they do this? Or why don't they? And it's like, wait a second. If it truly starts with me, then I need to do something to make a change. I need to go to a town hall meeting. And, you know, so complaining is not an answer. It's what can I do to bring about some change? And that's where the me part of this comes in.
You know, it's so interesting, Mary said that. We were actually earlier today, we had a, in the middle of recording all day, we had a Zoom meeting with some of our friends who are engaged in a manufacturing conference that I'm speaking at. And Mary's been helping me get ready for this so-called keynote. And I've got, it's only got 15 minutes. You have to be tight. You got to be to the point. And I kept playing in my head, if I were in the manufacturing industry, I'd be complaining about a lot. I'd be upset about a lot. I'd be concerned about a lot. What about those tariffs? You don't know what they're going to be. What about there's going to be a new governor? What is his policy, her policy going to be regarding manufacturing? AI, scary, daunting. And I keep asking myself, and I said this to Mary in that meeting, complaining is an emotion. I get it. I do it. By the way, what do you say when I complain?
Wah. I actually want to know what's great. I don't think that I've said that in 2025. I don't think that I have said wah to you in 2025. And I could say that with quite confidence because, well, A, because I think you know. Well, I mean, anybody that watches this show, and Dad, thank you, and Fran Adubato, Steve's mom, thank you for watching. Shout out to both of you. But everybody who watches this show knows I'm a tough cookie.
We have more than two people watching. Go ahead, Mary.
Yeah, we do have more than two. But yes, I'm a tough cookie. I don't like complaining. I don't deal well with people coming to me with a complaint or an issue. And it's like, yeah, the woe is me attitude. No, throw yourself a pity party by yourself because I don't have the patience for that. So what's that
have to do with being the change as opposed to complaining?
Because it's easy to complain. It's easy to point out the faults in the world around us. What's a lot harder is taking action and really being intentional and strategic about what can I do to make a difference in whatever.
You've done that.
Always. Absolutely.
And I'm not going to talk about any of the challenges that you face, which are private.
But just everything. I mean, whether it's a medical issue, whether it's, you know, they paved the street and they, you know, didn't, you know, they put crud on your sidewalk or what have you, whatever it is, I could just complain about it to the neighbors or send a group text and can you believe this happened? When instead you take a step back, okay, how can I actually make a difference? And sometimes the answer is you can't, but then stop complaining
because no one wants to.
Yeah, you try. Mm-hmm.
So that's the point of this ending, if you will, commentary, which is, trust me, I complain. I also know it's not a strategy.
Mm-hmm.
It's just how I feel. And I said in this meeting earlier today, and I'll wrap it up right here, is we all can complain. Go ahead and do it. Just put a cap on how long you do it and then move to, well, now what are you going to do about it? Elvin, I'm not going to complain. Elvin, our director, I'm not going to complain that you said, say goodbye, Steve. I'm just going to say goodbye. Does that all five fingers? Yes.
Yeah, I think
he just
that's
gave
maybe
me all
a
five fingers.
Clapping.
Thank you, Elvin. For Elvin, Frank, our entire team. Thank you. I feel gratitude, and thank you, April.
And Brendan.
Thank you, Brendan.
And Scarlett.
Filling in behind the camera for Scarlett and our entire team. Thank you, Sylvester, on the back end. We don't complain. Just deal with it. See you next time.
This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Bucino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, PragerMedis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, the New Jersey Sharing Network, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, showing the world what great minds can do since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA, and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ, and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.